As I walked through a grove of sequoia trees a few years ago, I felt as if I was in this outdoor sanctuary, surrounded by these immense trees, these immense beings that are alive and thousands of years old. It seemed unbelievable. Something make-believe, something that, you know, Disney would create at Disney World. Suddenly, I knew in the depths of my being that I was actually in the presence of something holy, something set apart. And the presence of God was everywhere. And I was dumbstruck. I thought to myself, how must I act in the presence of the sacred? Is there something, anything that I need to do? I wanted to take off my shoes like Moses so that nothing would separate me from this holy presence. And that's the thing about holiness. We don't know how to act when we are in it, and sometimes we overlook it altogether. And when we do recognize it, we believe that we must do something. Do you recall the story of the Transfiguration? Jesus took Peter, James, and John up a mountain where Jesus was transfigured, and Moses and Elijah appeared with him. And Peter was so awestruck, he said to Jesus, "Let us build three booths. Let us do something, anything to mark this amazing occurrence." And doing something is what the text from Romans is attempting to do. Paul, as someone reminded me the other day, was a devout Jew. Granted, one who was now rethinking what that meant in light of his experience of the risen Christ, but still, at the time, a Jew. As a devout Jew, he expressed his holiness in his day-to-day actions. Dressing a certain way, praying a certain way, eating food in a particular way. It was all part of the holiness code that was found in the Torah, the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, the law books. And they were not meant to be a burden to the Jewish people because they experienced the law, as they still do today, as a gift from God. For the Jewish people, the Torah guided them as to how to set themselves apart from the rest of the world because of their faith, because they were the chosen people who were to show the rest of the nations how to be holy, how to live in the world. And the law is and was an outward sign of their relationship with God. And Paul now brought this to bear on the early Christian community. If we are God's children, if we are followers of the Christ, then we must live differently from the rest. Not because we are better than anyone else, not because we are less inclined to sin, but because we choose to be chosen, and with chosenness comes responsibility. And so Paul teaches, you see how the world is, right? People love, but their love is full of hypocrisy. But when you love, your love will be genuine without hypocrisy. And they will know that we are followers of Jesus because the love we have for one another. And we will live hopeful lives even when we are suffering. And when we are in pain, we will persevere in prayer. Our community, well, we will care for one another, contributing financially also to the needs of each other, regardless of whether they deserve it or not, or whether we consider them the worthy poor or not. and we will extend hospitality to strangers. We will not treat them harshly, even if they are breaking the law. We will honor their humanity while they are among us, even if they don't look like us. And when people persecute us, he says, we'll bless them, not curse them. We will practice empathy and compassion, and we will rejoice with those who rejoice. We're not going to be jealous over others' success, and we will weep with those who will weep. And we will strive each and every day to resolve conflict so that we live in harmony with each other. And we won't seek places of affluence or high honor at the table, but live among the least of us. We will be humble, even the most wise, because none of us can truly know the mind of God. And let this all be our source of humility. And I know it makes us feel good when we are wrong to seek vengeance. It feels great. It appeals to our sense of fairness. But we're not to repay anyone evil for evil. We will be peacemakers. For Jesus taught us to love our enemies. Scripture says vengeance belongs to God alone. In fact, let's surprise the world. When our enemies are hungry, we'll feed them. If they are thirsty, we'll give them something to drink. We will overcome evil with good, and we will not let evil overcome us. Recently, I read this book called The Saint and the Sultan. It's a great book. It's a real easy read if you ever want to pick up something light. It's about the Crusades. The Crusades, Islam, and St. Francis of Assisi's Mission of Peace by Paul Moses. Let me tell you, it was an eye-opening experience. Gone was that kindly saint who kissed the lepers and loved the animals, you know, the blessing of the animals, St. Francis. Now, this was true, but the real Francis was a man devoted to Jesus and through his life exposed the hypocrisy and corruption of the church of his time. In the midst of the Crusades, Francis of Assisi and the Sultan Malik al-Kamil found common ground in their encounter outside the besieged city of Damietta, Egypt, in 1219. Francis walked up to the front lines of the war, risked his life to speak to the Sultan, and to everyone's surprise, formed a relationship with him that changed both their lives. Now, Francis, who initially thought to convert the Sultan, had a little conversion experience of his own and was changed by the encounter and came away deeply impressed with Islamic spirituality. But this truth about Francis and his relationship to Islam and the Crusades was covered up by the church. That's why we don't really hear about it. Just as Jesus had been turned into a blonde-haired, blue-eyed, nice man, instead of someone who disrupted the status quo of his day and alarmed the Romans to the point of having him killed, Francis's humility challenged the arrogance of the papal court, and his dedication to peace confronted the violent culture of his day. In fact, his devotion to peacemaking was concealed, and the story changed. We also learn that far from being an infidel, Malik al-Kamal was a very cultured man who loved learned conversation and preferred to negotiate with enemies rather than engage them in combat. and with what was withheld from most history books about the Crusades was that the Sultan was willing to return Jerusalem into the hands of the Christians, as well as the fact that the Prophet of Islam had reverence for Christian holiness. And the truth is that the Sultan was so moved by his conversations with Francis that he acted in a more Christian way than his so-called enemies. And this is a truth. When the Christian armies of the Crusade, due to their carelessness and arrogance, found themselves surrounded by the Sultan's army with no food and no water and no way to retreat, instead of destroying them, the Sultan ordered his men and give the Christian soldiers water along with their livestock. Sultan, who when he found his enemies hungry, fed them. He took to heart the wise and powerful words of Paul and was striving to live differently in the world. And so too are we. Because of our being Christ's body, because of being followers of Jesus, this was Paul's response to his experience of the holy. And centuries later, it was all but forgotten and still is, for the most part, today. We need to reclaim this holiness, redefining it for the 21st century. And I don't mean that we absolutely need to follow a particular holy list code or a list of behaviors. This, as Jesus showed, becomes an idol and an easy way to say we're holy. Rather, we need to ask ourselves individually and as a community of faith, what could be different about my life because of this reality of God, because of the holiness of God? How will I choose to live a holy life because I'm a follower of Jesus? Will I allow God to work in, with, and through me? Will I live by the commandment of Jesus to love one another as he loved us, believing by this they will know we are Christ's disciples? Now, don't judge me, but to my surprise, I've gotten hooked on the new series, The Chosen, about the life of Jesus. Now, to be honest, there's a lot I don't like about it. At the same time, the portrayal of Jesus is pretty good, I have to admit, at least from what I've seen so far. I'm only on the second season. But it drives home the idea that Jesus is trying to show his disciples over and over again that his entire ministry is about love. And all they can think about is when Jesus is going to overthrow Rome, when they're going to become famous and wealthy. And only the woman among them seem to see the truth, of course. We are to be different from the rest, this Jesus is teaching, because it's about love and nothing else. When we see these lists in the Bible about how to live, and what they are really trying to discern is how to live now that God has touched our lives. What Paul puts forth is definitely worthwhile and a good place to start. And if we live this way, the world would be a better place. But ultimately, we need to come up with our own list, our own way of living our life, because we have been touched by God's love. So what will each one of us do differently today after coming to the table and receiving Christ's body and blood? How are we going to show the world and everyone we meet today and the next day that we are followers of Jesus and so choose to live holy lives, so choose to practice and figure out how we are to love each other? Because it all comes to nothing if we come here each week simply to feel good and then go on with our lives as if nothing has changed, as if we have not been changed by God's love. Will we add to the suffering? Will we collude with the evil? Will we be silent in the face of cruelty? Will we turn a blind eye to the needs of the world? Or will we practice humility and empathy and compassion and mercy and love? I think when in the presence of holiness, like Moses, we take off our shoes because we begin to shed the unnecessary stuff of our lives. We open ourselves to new possibilities, new ways of seeing and experiencing the world. As we rest from our labors tomorrow, may we spend some of that time in prayer. May we put ourselves in places of awe and let holiness find us. And may we be still and know that God is God. Thank God for that. And may we begin our own plan for living out this holiness in our lives. The preacher Rob Bell is known for his gift of summarizing the message of the Bible, distilling these messages into 10-minute thought-provoking videos. Look them up, they're great. In an interview, he once distilled the message of Leviticus, my least favorite book of the Bible, containing the laborious laws, this way. He said, what the book is trying to say is, your life matters. How you prepare your food, how you deal with your neighbor, how you handle conflict. You are always on holy ground. This is not a random accidental phenomenon we know to be you, but your entire life takes place under a wide horizon of holiness and sanctity. So respect the mundane and the everyday, because it is there that the divine is found. And so my son and I sat and leaned against one of the great trees and silently allowed the holiness to wash over us. There were no words, only being, and the hope that this experience might help us to live differently, live more humbly, live more deeply into the love of God. May it be so.